And we know that when organizations have values that convey a message of caring for the employees, they're much more likely to be successful than those organizations that have values that speak more to what are the benefits to the shareholders and the business.
Hey, it's Nikki Llewellyn Gregory, and you're on Gut Plus Science. You're in for a fast-paced, storytelling, action item-rich leadership growth experience. I hope you make this podcast a habit. I consider it a leadership mentoring tool. Learning together makes us better together, and that is how we change the world around us. Let's get to it. Hey, Gut Plus Science listeners, I am so excited to learn from Rich Safir today. He is the Chief Medical Director of Employee Health and Wellbeing at Johns Hopkins Medicine, and he and I together, I'm just going to do this with him. We're going to put a stake in the ground. You can't outsource your well-being strategy. So, Rich, welcome to Gut Plus Science. I always get excited to learn from leaders in healthcare. I believe that the industry is so important and we have to be future thinking in how we're doing that in healthcare. And so I'm really excited to be your mentee today and to share this conversation with others. And so we're going to kick off with, why are you so passionate about that statement? You can't outsource your well-being strategy.
Well, I'm really excited that we're able to focus on that statement. You can't outsource your well-being strategy, because it's something I have said in many conversations and presentations, but yet I haven't been able to highlight why this is so important. Well, first of all, it's important because it's true, because no vendor or consultant is going to be able to understand your organization as well as the people who work inside the organization. And frankly, Nikki, the strategy needs to come from within the culture of the organization. Sure, there are some things that you may want to borrow from another organization, but really, to get to the essence of the well-being needs of your workforce, that needs to come from within.
So good. And the two things that I have shared many times over my, I guess, mission in doing this work around helping workplaces be meaningful in how they help their people to feel impact in their work. I always start with, okay, if you think about sales, you can't pay for someone to come in and just outsource the sales that you're doing. Do you know how much it takes to learn how to sell? And then as I evolved over time, I was like, you can never outsource culture. Culture is the vibe in which you're creating inside your workplace. It's like, you can't do that. And so we are saying the same thing for well-being. Like you said, Rich, no one will ever understand your business and your team like you do. There's so much to know and learn to be able to design that strategy, knowing the inner workings.
Yeah, but except that, you know, I just realized we may have skipped a step for some of the listeners. So we talked about not being able to outsource your well-being strategy. And for some of our listeners, they haven't even yet thought about culture as the strategy, as opposed to programs, benefits, and resources. And so there's definitely a difference, and maybe we'll explore this at some point, between programs, benefits, and resources. I like to say portal, prizes, policies, and programs, because all those P's sound kind of cool next to each other, and the differences between those and culture.
I think it's important before we talk about who owns like the employee health and well-being strategy, because I do want to go there. I want to talk about, where does well-being live? And how does well-being tie into what you just mentioned? Like, hey, we got to talk about culture, organizational strategy. Can you give us some insight on your perspective of where well-being lives?
Well, I mean, I can tell you from a data perspective where it lives. Most of the time it lives in human resources. Now, does it have to live in human resources? No, it doesn't have to. I mean, some of the larger organizations actually have employee health and wellness reporting right to the CEO. They are at the table with the CHRO as their colleague. But I've also seen employee health and well-being reporting to finance because of the huge financial impact it can have. I've also seen it married with DE&I, and there's huge overlap between the two. I'm not telling organizations where it should reside, but want your listeners to recognize that many successful organizations have this professional involved with not only their own conversation, but with all the other major business owners within the organization.
And I think one more thing to touch on as we stay up in this macro level for a minute is how that well-being strategy and those people that are owning it, how that fits into this, you know, umbrella of organizational strategy and culture. Can you just like connect those dots for a minute?
Well, Nikki, it's hard to think of anything that's not related to employee health and well-being. I mean, without a healthy and well workforce, you're going to be suboptimal in every which way. And so if you're not weaving your employee health and well-being strategy throughout your business objectives and have your own well-being business objective, you're really not optimizing the potential that a healthy and well workforce can bring to your company and organization.
Absolutely. Totally in agreement with you. I've got one more, let's set the tone at the high level. How would you define what employee well-being or workplace well-being is?
You know, I actually speak to this specifically, the difference between wellness and well-being, in a couple of paragraphs in one of the chapters of my book. And what I advise, Nikki, is to not allow this differential, this ongoing debate, distract from your team's ability to move forward. I mean, there are specific definitions, one that was written by the World Health Organization a long time ago, but yet it takes away from the overall effort and the essence of what most people agree on, is that the health and well-being are important to the organization. Some people think of health as what happens in the doctor's office. And other people think of well-being as what happens when you're not in the doctor's office. If you're lucky, you have a relationship with a physician who understands both. And if you're intentional and you're a leader of an organization and company, it's not luck. You know that it's a continuum, and you don't do one or the other, and you integrate both of them together.
You know, Rich, I just challenge myself. I always say, you know, culture is the most important thing because it is the vibe in which we operate. It's our norms. But I just wrote these notes. I said, well-being is actually core. It's like water and air.
Well, Nikki, I actually think that the optimal strategy is to create a well-being culture in the workplace. And so, yeah, there's the number of different ways you can define culture, but if you're not including well-being as a culture, then you're missing out. And Nikki, by the way, you mentioned norms. That is absolutely an essential part of the well-being culture model that I promote, because when we are part of a group where the norm is to take care of yourself during your day, and whether that's the social well-being or physical well-being or mental health, then it makes it more difficult to be in your optimal state if you're not part of a workplace that has those norms.
All right. So let's talk about the strategy. So well-being strategy. Tell us how you recommend we think about that. We're a leader. How do we, our mindset, what is well-being strategy and the components of it?
So we subscribe to building a well-being culture. Now, culture is the shared behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes of a group of people that has something in common. And for a workforce, the commonality is that you all work for the same employer. And so in our model, we have six building blocks. And if you want to remember these building blocks, you'll remember the phrase plan for success. And the P is for peer support. The L in plan is for leadership engagement. The N in plan is norms. There's your norms, Nikki. We're going to skip the word for and go to the word success. And the S in success is for shared values. The two C's for culture connection points. And the last S is for social climate. And there's way too much within that six building blocks to unpack them all today.
Yes. And you know what? For all those people that are right now trying to take this down as fast as me, and I'm their note taker that it needs to be in the notes, I'm going to have you do it one more time also because I want it to sink in. So peer support.
Yes.
That was number one.
Right. And then L is for leadership engagement.
Leadership engagement.
Uh-huh. And then the N in plan is for norms. We're going to skip that short word for and go to success. And the first S in success is for shared values. The two C's for culture connection points. Those are kind of like the nudges that help shape and make it easier for people to make healthy choices and be happier during the day. And then the last S is for social climate.
Okay. I got all six. So you can check the notes because I think I've got this double checked. So that'll be in there. And like Rich says, that's a lot to cover in this episode, but we are going to do our very best to hit these high points and then we'll have a lot of resources for you. So, okay, when we think about what can and should be outsourced, because our claim here was like, hey, you don't outsource this, right? But it's not that you can't outsource components. So what can be, or what maybe what should be, to help us be able to build a meaningful well-being strategy for our workforce?
Right. Well, first of all, you have to respect the size and the assets that you have available to you. So what's going to be good for a small business may not be the same as what's good for a large business. So let's just say that, you know, your organization and company is of a reasonable size that you can do some things yourself and some things outsourced. Hey, listen, you know, Johns Hopkins is not an IT company. We use IT like everybody else, but we don't create our own websites. So we outsource our well-being portal. That's important for us to have a partner who can provide that asset. And yet that is just an asset. That is a culture connection point. That is not our strategy. Another thing that would be commonly outsourced might be a person who specializes in leading different types of programs. So let's say you want to offer your employees a yoga class at noon on Fridays. You don't have to hire a yoga instructor on. I mean, that's probably not the best use of your money. So, you know, you hire an independent contractor. Those are a couple of classic examples, Nikki.
That's really great. Thank you for sharing that. And at another time, we might have you back to learn about all the tools that you recommend because it's like a well-being platform. There's so many out there. And so what have you found? So, you know, little teaser, Rich might be back.
Yep.
All right. So Rich, before we dig in a little bit more to these six different components to the strategy, is there anything that you would chime in on to go back to that question about who owns the well-being strategy? Who doesn't? Like, what have you learned?
I'll tell you that it's really important that who's ever responsible for it be a qualified individual. Unfortunately, sometimes an employer will just choose the person who shows the most interest or has the most passion for their own well-being. And there's a difference between an individual who lives a healthy and well lifestyle and someone who's a trained and experienced professional who knows how to do this in the context of a workplace and deliver and lead for an entire workforce. Now, there are a number of different ways to define qualified person. Nikki, I'll just give a shout out to anybody who has a bachelor's or a master's in health promotion. This is an art and science field that not a ton of companies know about. I mean, I should say not enough companies know about these professionals. These are the folks who literally go to school to learn what I'm doing, which is to use science, use art to effectively do organizational change so that an organization is more likely to support health and well-being. Now, Nikki, I studied nutrition in college 30 years ago. And so I was one of the few medical students who actually had some underlying education in something that was not like biology or chemistry. And my degree in nutrition helped me understand the influence of community, the social aspects of nutrition, and all of these different social sciences actually apply to the other behaviors like movement and sleep, et cetera. So I had a little bit of a head start. So I don't have a degree in health promotion, but certainly studied employee health and well-being once I was out in practice.
Rich, if you think about innovation It's so important today. Your favorite innovative solution that you found for well-being in the recent times?
You know, this is crazy, but my favorite innovation is that well-being is a team sport. And some of your listeners right now are like scratching their head, like, what kind of innovation is that? Well, when most people think about their health and well-being, they're thinking about themselves. And when most people are thinking about their coworkers' health and well-being, they're thinking, hey, this is what you might do. And it's you, or I. What about we? What about the we and well-being? There is so much science, Nikki, around the impact of our coworkers, our managers, our teams that influence our well-being that we are not leveraging. And so my idea of innovation doesn't necessarily mean that we have to get a software engineer to get involved. There are some very basic principles that most organizations are not drawing on yet.
Love it. Well-being is a team sport. Love that. And so what are the things, as those of us that are, you know, looking for this mentorship, what are we doing to create more of that team sport around all everyone being in on this? I really like that challenge. Okay, Rich, how do you do peer support? What is an example of how you're doing that currently?
So we do this in a couple of different ways. I would say one of the skeleton parts of our strategy is that we have a Healthy at Hopkins Champion Network. And so this is a group of almost 300 volunteer employees who we have them go through a vetting process. First of all, their manager has to be on board. Their manager has to sign that they will support this individual to use 1 or 2 hours a month to engage in champion activities. They go through some short skill building sessions, like how to listen well, the journey of behavior change. They need to know what resources are available so that they can come across as a trusted partner to their peers. And then once a month, we get them on a group video call to tell them what's the latest thing. So these individuals, these coworkers, serve as peers. They deliver information to their teams, but they also receive information. They can give us feedback about what's working and what's not, and they can also be trusted peers to point the colleagues in the right direction. That is a core element. Now, we weave peer support into so many things. For example, yeah, we offer a steps challenge to encourage movement, but we ask people to sign up in teams because we want the benefit of coworkers encouraging each other to get up and take a break during the day.
Okay, so leadership engagement, what is that from your perspective?
Leadership engagement is more than just saying, hey, we support employee health and well-being. It's getting involved. And one of the things I'm really proud of, Nikki, is integrating mindfulness into our well-being culture at Johns Hopkins Medicine. So I'll give you two examples of how our leaders have been engaged in that process. One was just a few months ago, the president of our health system introduced our certified mindfulness instructor, and she led a breathing exercise at the beginning of the quarterly town hall meeting. This is like broadcast to 40,000 employees if they're available at the time. Now, this is a big deal to take, you know, a segment at the beginning of one of these meetings to engage. And I'll tell you, the same breathing exercise we have woven through our strategy. And the other example of leadership engagement, Nikki, is we have a weekly newsletter. And once a month, we feature a leader and what their well-being path is. Well, guess what? One month, a leader featured this same 4-7-8 breathing exercise as something she does to help her go to sleep. So she's sharing how she works mindfulness into her day, her evening in this case, and that shows she is genuinely engaged. Now, I'm going to go off topic and just go away from leadership engagement for a minute. Now, Nikki, I mentioned that culture connection points was one of the building blocks. This is related to mindfulness. I don't want to forget before we move on to the next. So I've got my ID badge on for folks who aren't looking at the video. And right behind my ID badge on my lanyard is another badge, which is the same size. And it's a laminated card that shows the instructions on how to do this 4-7-8 breathing. This is a culture connection point. whenever an employee has to go through a secure door on our campuses, they have to swipe their card. And so there's a good chance as they're moving their card, they're going to see this other card, this breathing card, and it's going to be a reminder. They can either just take a deep breath right there, or maybe when they get to their destination, they'll sit down and take that 90 seconds to do that 4-7-8 breathing. It's an environmental cue that helps prompt the behavior that we know would improve their health and well-being.
That's awesome. And it becomes your own language.
Yeah.
You know, like other people outside of Johns Hopkins, like they're like, wait, 4-7-8, what? You know, but everybody in the organization knows that. It's a common language for you. That's neat. Which I think might roll into my question about following up on norms. So you had talked about creating, and I had said something about cultural norms, and from this angle of well-being norms, they're all similar, right? But talk a little bit more about some example norms.
So I'll stick with the mindfulness area. We offer a number of mindfulness resources and tools and such. One of them is called Live and Work Mindfully. It's a 4-week series, a half hour a week, that we offer to teams, and we only offer it to teams. We offer it to teams intentionally because we know that when teams of people practice a well-being exercise together, it normalizes that experience. When the manager is there, it says that this is important, and it gives people permission to take time out of their day. In fact, it's the expectation that they'll take time out of their day to participate in this. So there's actually an overlap of these different building blocks. And in this case, there's an overlap between the norms building block and the leadership engagement building block, because we won't offer this to a team unless it's coming from the team manager.
Which I will say is so important for programs across the board. It's, you know, like, let's say we have a DEI strategy. You can't outsource your DEI strategy, first of all. And you can't, I mean, you can do components like we're talking about here, but you can't say, okay, where that's going to live is with the two people in our DEI department, but then at the top, we're not practicing that. And so just across the board, we have to illustrate it's walk the walk. You are the ripple effect, right? And so that's really important. One of the things that I wanted to mention too, just as a shout out for our team at People Forward Network, which is the media company that oversees this podcast, is each year we get away in nature because I think that nature is a very grounding thing, right? It's like, it's magic. You get out in nature. You can even take a walk for 5 minutes and change your attitude. But you get out in nature. And so we rent a big cabin and we all come there and we, you know, plan, you know, healthy kind of food experiences. There's definitely wine involved, but, we brought in a yoga practitioner. We brought in a visualization specialist. So we did visualization together. We did breathing exercises. So we did somatic breathing, I think, in that recent one. I like breath work, so can't remember exactly which one we did. But we did a deep dive here. Some of the people on my team were like, what? But we did like inner child work. And it was a light one, but it just really all together and then shared in that. It's like, man, what is that about? It's about getting to the core of who you are to be able to operate, you know, as a healthy human. But I love doing that together. So it was really awesome.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that. Makes me feel good that there's other organizations who are moving to support their teams.
Yeah. Okay. So Rich, I'm watching my clock here. I still have a list of questions that I want to rattle away. Shared values is one of the six components. And so my question is the shared values that you're talking about specific to well-being, or you're saying like organizational shared values? Like, tell us more.
Well, there's a connection there, Nikki. So most organizations have core values, which is slightly different than shared values. So companies have values that are usually put together by a board of directors, if they're that big, or by the C-suite. It's rare that organizations create values that are the result of a conversation, not just with leadership or amongst leadership, but with frontline employees. And when it's an organizational effort or a sample of people across the organization, they're more likely to land on some of the values showing some type of support for well-being. And it may not come out as the word well-being, but it is related and supportive of well-being. And we know that when organizations have values that convey a message of caring for the employees, they're much more likely to be successful than those organizations that have values that speak more to what are the benefits to the shareholders and the business. There's a whole book written on this. There's papers on this. The science is just amazing.
So I'm not the academic on this episode. I always am the person that's like, okay, this is how it translates to me and some basics. So we're kind of playing, uniqueness here. But one of the things I just thought about is I love to reiterate that there's check the box and there's impact, right? Are we doing this to check the box or are we doing this for impact? And I started to think like core values versus shared values. Sometimes core values fall in the check the box. Yep, they're on the wall. They're on the website. Right? Too much. And it's like, why are we even doing it then? There's no impact. But if we look at the shared values, that's the outcome. That's us feeling that connection. And so just when you said that, I'm like, this is how it translates to me. I love that. And I challenge all of our listeners to think about, are your values alive? Are they shared? Right? That's the difference. Okay, Rich. So what does it look like when culture connection isn't there?
Well, the culture connection points, when they're not there, makes it much more difficult for employees to integrate well-being throughout their day. I mean, if we just look back at that little laminated card I talked about with the 4-7-8 breathing, that's a nudge. You know, many organizations that are large enough to have a cafeteria, they may have nudges in their cafeteria, like a little symbol that denotes what is the healthiest choice. And so that makes it much more easy for employees to not only be reminded, but to be nudged to make that healthy choice. You know, nobody wants to be told what to do, what to eat. People, though, appreciate when it's made easier and they have the choice to make healthy and well choices. So, these are the nuances that make the difference between having a good idea and actually bringing it to life.
Thank you for that. And I wanted to touch on social climate before we leave, because I think that people might be like, I'd like to know the definition. So help us understand, what is social climate? And then what is it when it's awesome?
Yeah. So social climate is the way we feel when we go to work or when we think about work. You know, Sunday night, are you dreading the next day? Maybe there's a problem with the social climate on your team or in the organization. And there are three main ingredients that contribute to a good social climate. There's having a positive outlook. There is feeling like you belong, not just part of a team, but you actually feel like you're part of the community. And that there's a shared goals and a vision, like you're all working towards the same thing. And so when you have an awesome social climate, you feel like you're amongst friends, that you're with a trusted group, that people that you are already seeing them outside of work, or you could see yourself being with them outside of work.
Yeah. You enjoy being together.
Yeah. You're not just putting up with them for, 40 hours a week.
I will say that the majority, I don't even think I have to pull a statistic for this. We all could agree that most people don't feel that way, And gosh, how do we lead change in that where, there needs to be concentrated relationship building time. This is not like check it off to get all the work done. It's like human connection needs time for nurturing.
Without a doubt. And Nikki, if there are leaders listening right now, they're like, good Lord, I have so many responsibilities already. How am I going to fit this onto my plate? Well, I will tell you, and that's not my opinion. There's like 300 references in my book. If you focus on creating a well-being culture on your team, all of the other pieces will fall into place. It will make it much easier to lead a successful team, and your own well-being will benefit.
The level of ownership by an individual and the level of productivity by an individual when we bring that to the table. Night and day. Well, okay, Rich, I have to bring this part to a close. I feel like we did a good job of covering so much, but I want to wrap up before we head over to our lightning round with the resources. Like you had mentioned your book, and I know there's a few other things. We'll link that out in the show notes. So what are the resources available for our listeners?
Yeah, you can read some blogs. You can get access to some other recordings, podcasts, webinars. There's some articles that were published in newspapers at richardsafir.com. If you can spell my name, you can find my website, and Nikki will have it spelled out on her show page. If you're a leader and you really want to build those skills on how to lead a well-being culture, in addition to the book, you would go to creatingawellbeingculture.com so that you can have an interactive experience.
Well, Rich, are you ready to move over to the lightning round?
Yes, I have my hand hovering over the buzzer.
Okay, this is so exciting. So, you know, there are probably many people that work with you at Johns Hopkins that might learn something new right now. Like, you and I are meeting for the first time, but I do look for some like golden little nuggets of things that other people don't know. First thing, we ask this on every episode, so this is not new, and we grow this list, which is super fun. What is your favorite book of all time or favorite recent read?
I'm going to have to go with the latter because all time, that's going to be too hard to narrow down. Actually, Nikki, favorite book this month, because I read a lot. Right now, I'm in the midst of reading Unwinding Anxiety by an MD, PhD. His name is Judson Brewer. And this is getting to the core of the origin of our anxieties. And you know, so far, I'm pretty excited because it's looking at the challenge a different way.
Tell us about any connection that you have to The Sound of Music.
Oh, you brought that up. Okay. Well, anybody who knows me, I'm a pretty intentional and pretty serious and, you know, goal-oriented person. However, there's a little bit of fun underneath this this skin. And back in high school, I was in high school musicals, and my senior year, I was the Baron von Trapp. I was the lead male in The Sound of Music. And something that people find a little bit humorous is that I needed to wear leather lederhosen in one of the scenes. That was a little bit embarrassing for a high school boy, but I've gotten over it.
If my producers ask for video footage of that to link in there, you can just go ahead and tell them no. Okay, because this does hit a lot of people to be able to see that. But that sounds like a lot of fun and they might follow up.
I bet you my parents have it, but I don't.
My mom would totally have that on me. Okay, and then can you share a special place that you got to spend time in your life that when you think of this, you just cherish it?
Yeah, I've been drawn to the outdoors, I think most or if not all of my life. And I've had an opportunity, well, not since, you know, I've been a quote unquote adult, but several times spending a month somewhere or another. And I guess the first thing that comes to my mind, Nikki, is a month in Alaska. I was volunteering on a Native Alaskan hospital base. And I had a little time before and after and on the weekends to travel. The sheer beauty, the cleanliness, the vastness of Alaska was just inspiring and calming. And I haven't been there in 30 years. But boy, yeah, that gave me a very peaceful feeling inside.
Well, Rich, this has been just a lovely time. I very much enjoyed this. Can you share what is the best way for people to follow up with you and just connect, stay connected after the episode today?
Yeah, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So love to share information with you there. You can also email me at richardsafir@gmail.com. Again, if you can spell my website, you can spell my email address.
Rich, this conversation was truly a blast and so full of takeaways to help us drive a well-being strategy that truly makes meaningful impact. So thank you so much. And like I mentioned multiple times, I think you'll be back because we have a lot more to talk about. Here's my truth you can act on. No one will ever understand your business like you and your team that work on the business every day. So trying to outsource something at a strategy level is really not a good idea. Now, let's think about well-being as the core to everything. It's a must. It's like water and air. I love that statement because it's so true. Unless humans that are working there are healthy and clear and feeling good, you know, we're not going to have the outcomes that we want. We must create well-being norms. Yes. Well-being culture is the shared beliefs and attitudes and commonalities that we have. There are 6 components to a well-being strategy: peer support, leadership engagement, norms, shared values, culture connection points, and social climate. You can totally outsource tactical things with well-being. Rich shared the example of a yoga trainer. So probably won't have one on staff full time, but to have a 1099 contractor that is an awesome yoga instructor, heck yes. And finally, the social climate thing is a new term to me. I've heard that before, but I wasn't embracing it to really understand. And there's 3 ingredients to an awesome social climate, which is positive outlook, feeling part of the community, and shared goals and vision. Oh, so good. I encourage you to take advantage of Rich's offer to reach out to him or those resources that he shared. I know my new book is in the mail. So thank you so much, Rich. I can't wait to read your book and have you back on Gut Plus Science. We just left the world a little bit better. Now go do something with it.